Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. How are you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well, getting excited about Good Friday. We bought a filet for our Easter dinner, and we have egg fighting championship Sunday morning, and I pick up the trophy tomorrow.
Is that an annual thing or a new event for you guys?
No, we do it every year, and usually my daughter Kelly wins.
And egg fighting, rules?
Yeah, well, there aren't a lot of rules, but you hold one egg in your hand, and then the other person has an egg in their hand, and then you knock the ends together, and last person standing wins the trophy.
Oh, there you
and
go.
Bragging rights, which is far
more important.
That's more important.
Good stuff. So what kind of show we got today?
This is going to be a fun show. We've got a studio full. We got one on the way, maybe. We'll find out a little bit later in the program. We're going to get a chance to visit with our buddy Bob Littell, no stranger to the Business Radio 8's microphone. He's going to get us caught up on some of the happenings there with their effort, net weaving, and pay it forward and all that good stuff. And we're going to get a chance to have a conversation with Lisa Decker. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Chief Operating Officer, the Grand Poobah, with an organization called InCrowd, Mr. Lance Weatherby. Welcome to the show, man.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Cool name, InCrowd. What's that all about, man? Tell us a little bit about the mission and purpose.
Yeah, so InCrowd just it's a recently formed entity that came out of a company called Half Off Depot. We purchased a company called Crowd Savings out of Tampa, Florida recently, and when we did that, we decided to rebrand the company and bring it all together under one roof. Essentially, we play in the local online marketing space.
Online marketing for local retailers? Who's your target?
I mean, I hate to say this, but essentially, we compete with Groupon, even though we are not really a daily deal company. But people come to our web properties, and they purchase vouchers from us for discounted offers from local retailers.
Now, how has the online space kind of blown up the coupon-y retailer, discount way of doing business?
Yeah, so the space itself is, it's been a very up-and-down market, primarily because of what's happened with Groupon and their IPO and what happened after that.
Right. And then but with Groupon, they had an opportunity to sell much earlier to a larger entity, and they chose not to, and then they went IPO.
Yeah, so if anybody ever offers you $6 billion for your business,
right.
my advice is to take it.
Just a new rule of thumb.
Yeah,
out
just
there.
A little one.
This is right. The kind of practical counsel you can get when you listen on Atlanta Business Radio.
So, but they chose not to, and then the Groupon way of doing business, these daily deals, it seemed like everybody and their mother, a new daily deal was popping up. I mean, Amazon got into it. And then, they with kind of mixed success, I would think.
Yeah. So at one point, there were actually 600 competitors in
600
the market.
600 doing daily deals in a variety of ways.
Yes. And when Groupon announced that they were going to do their IPO and started doing their filings with the SEC, it basically soured a lot of financial investors on the market as a whole just because of the way they handled that. And we actually anticipated that the market for financing was going to dry up, and we made a really quick decision that what we needed to do was to get cash flow positive so that we could survive as a company, and that's essentially what we did.
So now how is your model different than the Daily Deal or Groupon?
Well, there's two sides to this equation. There's our customer, who's really the merchant, and then there's the consumer that gives us money. And to a consumer, the reason why it's different is that we have this online store. We like to call it an Amazon of experiences, where people come to our store and they shop for things that they want to do, and they buy them, and then they go do them without any pressure of this offer is going to go away.
Mm-hmm. So like a Groupon is a limited time, like the daily deals where you were –
It's a day.
Right. So that's the only time you can get that offer, and then it goes away, theoretically, right?
So how does the selling piece of this work? People walk into the guy who owns a pizza joint and explains the program to him, or is it well enough known now that they just go to the internet and sign up or something like that?
No, it's a pretty intensive local sales effort. And what we talk to our merchant customers about is the fact that you know, we're not here to drive a horde of one-time users into your business. We're here to help you market online and to replace a lot of the more traditional media that has gone away over the course of the last 5 or 6 years.
So, right, because I heard some horror stories of the Groupons where, like, somebody would try it, and then there would be, like, in a month, there'd be thousands of new people that are just looking for a deal, and they couldn't service them well because they were too small.
Yeah, and they'd get overwhelmed. They get negative reviews,
and then your Yelp score goes.
And it doesn't always work well. So when we work with merchants, we have conversations with them on how many new customers they're looking for, and the conversation is the things that we can do to drive a steady flow of new customers to them. And then after these new customers come into the door, some online retention marketing things that we can do in order to keep them coming back again.
So it sounds more consultative, that it isn't you're just trying to sell them this offering.
Yeah, it's much more consultative. Essentially, we are becoming their online marketing partner.
Yeah.
Right. We use email, we use social media. We actually purchase online advertising on behalf of our merchant partners. So it's a lot more holistic than a one-time email blast, and our merchants seem to like that more.
But now, does it scale at the same speed as a Groupon was?
The fastest growing company in history, according to Forbes or Fortune. I don't think we're scaling that fast, but we are growing. We're up to 60 employees now, and it's a little bit as steady as she goes because we're essentially self-funding as we grow because of what I mentioned before about the financial markets drying up a little bit.
So what's your backstory? Did you have a real job before you got into this online marketing world?
I did. I did have a real job. I actually worked for Georgia Tech in something called the Advanced Technology Development Center.
Oh, yeah.
And I was what they called up a startup catalyst, which is a pretty cool title. But essentially what I did was consult with startup companies on what they needed to do to take their business to the next level. And the way that I ended up in that position is I entered the internet world back in 1995 with a company called Mindspring. I was a very early employee there and ended up running sales and marketing. So from that experience, I got to see a lot of things that were necessary to grow an internet company. And I just have a lot of blink type of knowledge about that.
Mm-hmm. So now, if I'm a, what do you need more of? Do you need retailers to participate, or you need customers to go to the website? What are you looking for?
Yeah, we need all that stuff. I mean, with the purchase of Crowd Savings and the rebranding of the company to InCrowd, we're in about 20 cities right now where we are actively marketing local offers to consumers. So our consumer base is actually growing organically just via word of mouth. We literally spend zero money on marketing, as you would know it.
And marketing to the consumer that goes to the website to get the deals?
Yes. But
the merchants, that takes more time and
that's
nurturing.
Yeah, that's salespeople. That's sales numbers, Okay, guys, you got to contact 50 new merchants every week in order to kind of get to where you
want to. So how do they go about doing that? They're literally like walking through shopping centers? Or is that secret sauce?
it's not secret at all. But they pick up the phone and they'll call up merchants, and sometimes they'll get them on the phone, and sometimes they won't. And if we're not able to get to the person that can make that decision, we will show up. We will become a patron of their establishment and get to know some folks and try to get our story out and let them understand what we do, because it's really easy to lump what we do into your daily deal company.
Now, what about, I've seen Google is putting an effort, to get merchants to do, pay-per-click, and, they're making a lot of calls and emails and things like that. Is that a competitor?
Google's like the Microsoft of, the last decade. Mm-hmm. But in some regards, Google is a competitor. They're also a partner of ours.
Mm-hmm.
We provide them with local deals. We're essentially their sales force, and they're a valuable partner of ours. So we are interested in what they are doing and their pay-per-click for local merchants, because part of that is what we do for our merchant.
Right, that's one of the services you offer.
Yeah, but I mean, just the local merchant, they want to run their business.
Right, they got a pizza shop or a sub shop, or they're doing whatever they do.
Yeah, they don't look at computers the way I look at a computer all day long. They look at people, and they really, a lot of them don't have the inclination or the time to really focus on this. And we're trying to be their partner to do that.
So you take that off their plate and the help so they can focus on what they do. Now, is your service, is it encompassing like text offers and things like that as well? Because, you know, like texting, you know, when, you know, you can go and get a coupon through a text.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a, it seems that every day there's a new kind of hip hot way to market to the consumer.
Yeah. And the where we're really focused right now is more on the social area. Mm-hmm. And we help our merchant partners build up their Facebook presences by just driving consumers to that. Mm-hmm. And which that's one of the way that ways that they can remarket to the people that we bring in their doors is via their Facebook page. So we help them grow that presence.
So the relationship works, the your person contacts them, they express an interest, and then this person sits down with them to see what their objectives are, and then you guys kind of build an offering that kind of solves as many of those problems as possible?
Exactly.
Well, it seems like a slam dunk to me for the pizza joint, the sandwich shop. Does in-crowd services lend themselves at all to the professional service world as well? And if not, are there other services that do?
So we do a lot of consumer services, and that seems to work pretty well. We really haven't ventured into the world of professional services because our audience, our consumer audience, while they do things to make a lot of money, you know, their income is very high. They really come to our web properties to do things for themselves individually or for their families.
But I got to believe, though, online marketing, probably there's plenty of room there for professional services, too. I mean, with your background, you probably see a lot of opportunity for things to be cultivated in that arena as well, don't you?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I used to have a boss, and he said a small business person is nothing but a consumer with a tie. And
that's great.
There's truth to that. So, you know, there could be an avenue for us to go down that route. It's just not where we're focused right now.
So now it's a B2C play. You have 20 markets you said you're in. Atlanta, I'm assuming, is one of the 20. And how is it going here in town?
It's going great in Atlanta. Atlanta's our largest market by far. We are the number three participant in all the markets where we serve, so we're in a pretty decent position that we feel. But Atlanta is our flagship market. If we can turn every market we have into an Atlanta, we'll have a very, very healthy business.
So now the companies that you're trying to target, are they all restaurants, or it could be like a hair salon, a spa?
Yeah, so the when you look at what we're doing, some of the companies need a little bit more selling than others. So what our consumers really like is they like food, they like restaurants, and they like entertainment type of offers. Mm-hmm. So we actively go out and get those types of offers. So we have been, you know, Medieval Times is one of our partners, mm-hmm. if you guys are familiar with that.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
You know, we basically entered into an agreement with them that, hey, we're going to bring you 2,000 new customers in 90 days. And we do that on an ongoing basis, and they're gone. I mean, it's like, boom, they go away.
Wow.
The Children's Museum of Atlanta is another example of the type of offer that our consumers really eat up. I mean, 8,000-10,000 of those things, you know, out the door. So we go and get those type of offers that bring people into the site via word of mouth, and then they can actually see other type of offers such as salons, that you mentioned, but those people literally come to us because we are the only form of online advertising they have. If you open a new, you know, salon and you don't really have a lot of marketing money to spend, working with in-crowd's a good way to get your name out there without any upfront cost.
Well, and designing the offer is important. Distributing the offer is important. It sounds like you have competent, driven people that are there to help you craft that program. Because I could see somebody like me, I might do a great job of running a pizza joint, but I could really screw up both ends of that, right, without some counsel.
Yeah, you could. And we try to counsel our merchant partners on those type of things. You know, obviously the merchant has a lot of input in what we're doing, and a big driver of it is you actually have to create the offer in such a way that it's a win for you as a merchant, where it's something that you're not going to lose money doing the promotion, that it's put together in such a way that the price point is something that works for you. And usually that involves putting it together in such a way that there's an upsell So if you're a pizza guy and your average ticket is, you know, $20, you don't want to do an offer where the consumer is worth $20. You want to do an offer where it's, you know, $15, and then you get that $5 upsell when they come in the door.
And that's is that a common mistake that people make when they're doing this on their own?
It's a mistake that people make oftentimes because salespeople for other companies in the space are incented to get as much as they possibly can out of a single deal.
Uh-huh. Oh, so they're looking at it as kind of a transaction, and you're looking to build a relationship with them over time.
Yes.
So what's the best way for merchants to get in touch with you, and how do we as consumers get tapped into this thing?
So we have, as a consumer, we have two websites that we're operating right now. One is halfoffdepot.com, which is www.halfoffdepot.com, and then
very clever,
and then crowdsavings.com as well. And if merchants go to those websites, there's places where they can request for us to contact them to work out a deal.
So I get the Half Off Depot emails on my phone. So now I got to do the in crowd thing.
Yeah, we got to build that out on the phone. It's in progress.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Coming soon.
Well, thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us this morning, man.
It's a pleasure to be here.
How about hanging with us while we visit with our next guest?
Love to.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have from Littell Consulting Services, our buddy Bob Littell. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Stone. How about you?
I'm doing well. So good to see you again. You're the best dressed in the studio, as is almost always the case.
Well, I had another meeting this morning that I had to dress up.
You had a real business meeting. And then you get to come play with us. So what's going on over there, man?
Oh, gosh. Life's good and busier than I thought when you get 65, and now I'm 66. You get to retire and just lay back, drink beer, and I'm finding I'm having the busiest period of my life, but having fun.
That's fantastic. So lots to talk about, but before we dive in too deep, how about giving our listeners a quick overview of this whole net weaving, pay it forward concept of yours?
Well, it's now over a decade old, and it actually started out because I, like a lot of salespeople, hated the concept of networking. You just picture going in a room and having superficial conversations until somebody sees you're not the perfect prospect, and it's on to the next person.
And they're looking over your shoulder during half the conversation.
Exactly.
You get that, right?
Yeah. So net weaving kind of came, my background, of course, is 40 years in insurance, half on the home office side, half on the field side. And I'd really found that most successful people I'd known were actually doing net weaving without a word for it. So net weaving really has two primary components. One is learning to listen with a second pair of ears, because you're still going to be listening realistically for your own needs. But net weaving teaches people to listen with a second pair of ears and to be tuned in with a second pair of antenna of who do I know that you would benefit meeting, and what resources do I have for possibly somebody in my network that would be has the same kind of give first in order to get mentality, and then find a way to put people together and also offer resources, no strings attached, just because you believe truly, you genuinely believe what goes around comes around. And initially, the action step of net weaving is hosting meetings to introduce two people to each other. And then when they usually turn the table and say, how can we help you? You ask them to simply pay it forward and host a meeting for two others. And that's really how I made the connection with the Pay It Forward Foundation, which is run by the lady who wrote the book the movie's based on. And I was initially saying, after somebody had turned the table, why don't you Pianto Stone? And they'd look at me funny, and I'd say, yeah, you pass it on to two others. And people kept
Piantos,
saying,
I like that.
Yeah, so people kept saying, haven't you seen the movie Pay It Forward? And I hadn't, so I saw the movie, called Catherine Ryan Hyde, the lady who wrote the book, and that's how we established a long-term relationship. And then the second book that I wrote, The Heart and Art of Net Weaving, with Arthur Blank on the testimonial, I've been doing this all my life, I just never had a word for it. All that money from the sale of that book goes to charity. And so that's kind of where it goes. But the most exciting part of this, and the reason that I think you wanted me to come back around, is to tell you about Net Weaving Pay It Forward Week.
And it's coming up.
It's coming up, April 15 to 19. And actually, it's now going to be the third week of April every year, because now the third Thursday of every April is International Pay It Forward Day, celebrated now in 52 countries. And the idea is that day to do some random act of kindness for someone and then ask them to pay it forward and do the same thing for two others. So we've got a governor's proclamation now for making that week, Net Weaving Pay It Forward Week. And gee, I love maybe Lance or something we can talk about later, because the idea during that week is to create a dual economic ripple effect for the whole state of Georgia. We started out just with a city, but now I spoke to the Georgia Association of Chamber of Commerce executives. Because at first we started thinking we were going to need to talk to the restaurants, and they're just worried about keeping the doors open and running their business.
Right.
So this year we're just going to put the total emphasis on chambers of commerce and getting their business owners, small business mid owners, to host meetings all that week. And just imagine a city of Atlanta filled with these Net Weaving hosting meetings, where the good news is not only what's happening that week, but all those subsequent meetings that are taking place in weeks to come.
Now, are there any events, like specific events, that are happening throughout the week?
Well, the three years that we've done this before, we've had a luncheon on that Thursday. And frankly, this year, totally separate story, but I think you know about it. This is the fourth year that we've gotten Hallmark to donate 7,000 children's recordable storybooks.
Oh,
and
cool.
Normally we get those in November and then distribute them to homeless shelters, battered women shelters, and also the other end to children's health care or Starlight Foundation, Camp Sunshine, any children's organizations that are having challenges with life-threatening diseases or conditions. But this year, because of the Midwest storms, we didn't get the books until February. And so I've been kind of balancing and trying to juggle those two, and finally just decided we can't do the luncheon this year. But what that's really allowed me to do is to really totally focus just on this idea of promoting the filling up the restaurants, hotels, clubs, bars, whatever, with the meetings. And I think in some ways it's going to be better doing that.
So are you buying into all this nice guy, finish
Absolutely.
First stuff, Lee?
Yeah, you know, that's a core tenet of our company.
No, it really is. It's what attracted me to being part of this organization. But I just think so much of the work that you're doing. So how can we help, man?
Well, I mean, it's obviously it's getting the word out, and it's really inspiring people to really understand that, in a way, net weaving is selfish. Because I call it, you're doing it out of enlightened self-interest. Your goals are to help connect other people or provide them with resources, no strings attached. But it's truly because down deep, you so truly believe in the concept, what goes around comes around, that you know in some way that it's going to come back around to help you. And boy, have I got the stories to prove it over and over and over again. And the ripples. The other thing, you see these analogies of ripples of energies. Well, the fascinating thing about this is when you start out and set one set of ripples because of one connection you make over here, next thing you know, it bumps into this totally separate set of ripples over here and creates a net weaving tsunami. So.
Now, can you share maybe a story from that, a specific?
Well, I guess the best one really is this Hallmark story and how it came about. And I was getting ready to give a speech in Dallas, Texas, and I had been marketing vice president of an insurance company there, and a fellow who used to work for me, I called him up the night before I was supposed to speak and said, I had an open night. Gee, would you have an opening for dinner? And he said, gosh, I've been invited to a really high-level reception at SMU, where they're announcing that SMU's been selected on a national basis as a training center for Hispanic leaders. Why don't you come? One of our guys can't come. Why don't you come as my guest? So we walk in. First lady we meet is the lady, Pat Martinez, who heads it on a national basis, and all the major companies were there. And we told her a little bit about net weaving. She loves it and drags me over and introduces me to Yolanda Casey, who happened to be head of all digital printing for Hallmark cards. So we emailed back and forth, but nothing big. And then around Christmas, I'm watching TV, and I see this ad with two little African-American kids sitting under a Christmas tree. And as they open this book, it's their grandmother's voice reading to them. Well, I think you've had me talk about another project where I've adopted this all-black school in South Atlanta, where every year I go teach net weaving and pay it forward to third graders. And then go back in the spring, and every fifth grader gets their net weaving pay it forward diploma.
Cool.
And about 20% of our kids are being raised by a grandparent. And so the net weaving light goes off and says, wow, I wonder if I could get them to donate a couple of dozen of these books. And then we'll get literacy volunteers that I'd done programs for to train the semi or the illiterate adults to read the book as a legacy and hopefully an inspiration to want to become fully literate. And so I write this impassioned email and get a one line, I'm sorry, your project doesn't qualify. So luckily I'd copied this Yolanda Casey who I met in Dallas, and she at least told this lady, call, tell him why. And she said, well, your project isn't big enough. And I said, well, let's see, I'm on the board of Atlanta Partners for Education, which is all of Atlanta Public Schools, the business community, and the Metro Chamber. How big does it mm-hmm. need to be? She said, how about a truckload?
Oh, baby.
So this is the fourth year that we now Hallmark calls us because we've given them so many stories. But this year, what's really exciting is Hallmark has given us permission to actually use the recording. If you've seen the books, it actually has the recording mechanism in the book. So you open to a page, you press play, record, and then save. And then the next page, you do the same thing. And finally, when the book is done, whoever opens to that page, it's their voice reading it to them. So they, this year, said, listen, if these books that we've given you don't fit, we don't mind you simply using the recording mechanism and literally pasting over. So we want to get graphic artists and writers and some people who think they might have a children's storybook and literally make their own book and, who knows, create some stories that we take back to Hallmark. And Hallmark says, boy, do we love that one. We're going to buy that one from you. So that's the biggest thing. And that story, those ripples just keep spreading.
That's fantastic. Now, there is one level of this where Ali and Estone and the folks in this room intellectually and emotionally buy into this idea of net weaving.
Yeah.
And to pay it forward mentality. But you actually have some structure to offer people so that they can execute on this net weaving and make it happen. Can you speak to that just a little bit before we wrap?
Well, yeah, the thing that to make any concept really have a life expectancy beyond me, there has to be training the trainers. And so last year I decided to launch a number of pilot programs actually teaching people not only the skill sets, but how to actually put them into action and then to create coaches and trainers and people who would then be certified to literally do what I do. And so luckily, I did a program for the Georgia Coaches Association, who's now part of ICF, the International Coaching Federation. And we've just concluded an arrangement where we're going to train coaches, hopefully not only here in Atlanta, but eventually all over the country. And that will hopefully end up making net weaving something that not only is here, but literally all over the world. But the other thing that I'd like to say just before we sign off is this concept, I would love to eventually be taught at every business school in the country.
Yeah.
Because not my idea again, but a professor at Georgia State convinced me that I ought to teach MBA students how to do it, and several of them gave me the idea that this is a tremendous way for students with a little bit of chutzpah and a little bit of courage. They can literally recruit their own mentors by using net weaving as a way to set up a meeting between two business leaders and let them sit in, actually set the meeting up and sit in and listen.
Outstanding. Well, let's leave our listeners with some coordinates so they can learn more about net weaving, pay it forward, as upcoming activities for the for
well, the
April.
Net weaving website is netweaving.com, and the net weaving website for the net weaving pay it forward week is netweaving-pif, as in pay it forward-week.com.
Well, thanks so much for coming down, man. We got to have you back periodically. Let us know what's going on. Always love it. You just have so much passion and energy around what you're doing, and we just think so much of your work.
Well, I really appreciate your giving a voice to it. Thanks.
Delighted to do it. How about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
Will do. Thanks.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us from Divorce Money Matters, Miss Lisa Decker. How you doing, sunshine?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're delighted to have you. I got to tell you, you know, I'm a little nervous about talking about divorce, but I, you know, it's one of those topics you got to talk about, and if you do, you got to get your mind right around the money, yeah?
Well, it comes down to the money and the children usually. So we want to make sure that things are done well.
Is that why most people get divorced? Not why, maybe, but money is probably a big piece of it, isn't it?
There's a lot of reasons that people get divorced, and I'm not an advocate for divorce, honestly. I hate to see people get divorced. One of the first discussions that I have with folks when they come to see me is, have you seen a marriage counselor? I really encourage people to give it another shot, give it every shot, because it is a final decision, and it really can tear apart the family for, you know, generations to come, the long-lasting effects. So I'm on a mission to help people do it in a smarter, saner, and savvier way, and really change the way that divorce is done across this country.
Is there any kind of basic tips that you can share to help people kind of manage this in a less painful way, like financially?
Well, yes. I would say one of the biggest things is that you want to, you know, start doing some planning early. Gather documents, get a good team in place. People tend to think divorce and they think attorney, and that's all they think of. And there's a lot more to divorce than just your legal team. You've got to have a financial team, and you've got to have an emotional support through a therapist or counselor or support group, something like that.
So tell us about this alphabet after your name on the card, the CDFA. What's this all about? Did you make this up? This
no,
is real, right?
No, I it is definitely real, and it stands for Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. And, you know, it is a mouthful, but we are the best-kept secret out there, and I'm on a mission to change that as well, because having a CDFA on your divorce team can really make a difference in the outcome that you experience. And I, you know, I want to add something in here that I haven't had a chance to talk with you guys about, but listening to all this talk about net weaving, and I do believe so much in that. I am actually going to be holding my first mixer for divorce professionals, because I feel it's so important for professionals to know about the other partners that should be on the team. I mentioned three. I mentioned an attorney, a therapist, and a financial advisor, and especially a divorce financial advisor. But there are other folks out there that I bring in. I act as a liaison, if you will. I amass a team for folks, and that's going to include people like a realtor and a mortgage banker and insurance folks, and, you know, so many other critical pieces that we look at individually and then put together like a puzzle to make a greater whole. And so I'm really excited about this. Going to be doing this May 7th here in Atlanta. And just looking forward to bringing together professionals who can help bring more to their clients by knowing about each other and how we all fit into that puzzle.
So now you had talked about the importance of working with a CDFA mm-hmm. type person and building this team together. Is there any other mistakes other than this team building that a couple or a person, one of your clients, makes?
Oh, lots and lots of mistakes. There's a lot of tax mistakes that can happen in divorce. There are credit issues that people don't know about. Wanting to have the experience over quickly, that's one of the biggest mistakes I see people make. If I had a dollar for every time people say, I want this over quickly, I probably could retire, but
but it's natural. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
It does. It really does. It's a painful process, and everybody wants it over with quickly, but it is a process, not an event, and that's what I remind people. You want to do this in a very concrete way. You want to make sure that things are looked at thoroughly and that you're not making mistakes along the way.
So your backstory, what did you do before you did this, or you've always done this?
No, actually, I was in construction for nearly 20 years.
Of course, that's what I thought.
Quite
that's
a shift.
That's what I told Leah. So I bet she was in construction, and then she started doing this. What? You got to explain.
Okay, well, you know, I did that for nearly 20 years with my husband in South Florida. We loved the business, but we got tired of heat, humidity, and hurricanes, and decided to sell the business and move to the Atlanta area. And looking for the next chapter in my life, I was recruited into an international financial services firm. And through that work, I found out about the CDFA designation. And then once I got started with it, I realized this is full-time. You know, you've really got to give your all to folks. They need my full-time and attention. So this is what I do now.
So how do you know, or when do you know, when is it time to call Lisa? How early in the process? That's a little dicey, right?
Yeah, I would say like anything else, you know, the earlier on, the better. And it's not plotting, or it's really intense planning. You know, you need to know what your choices are. You need to know how to make smart choices. You need to know your options. A lot of people, again, think attorney and that's it. And, you know, an attorney is a valuable player in the team, but maybe you're more suited for a mediated type setting. Maybe collaborative divorce is better for your situation. So we go over the options. If you've already stepped into the realm where you've hired a very highly litigated type attorney, then that's probably the manner in which you're going to proceed in your divorce. And so a lot of people don't realize that. So I help them understand the options and then, you know, put them in place with referrals for the right type of legal advisors for them.
Now, on your website, do you have this kind of information, like general information like this, on tips and things like that?
I do, and I actually offer a free divorce financial fitness kit that has 50 questions to ask when hiring an attorney, and also has a complete spreadsheet, a workable Excel spreadsheet to tell you all the documents you need to gather, and a very informative ebook, and it's all free right there on the website.
But download it and save it to a file marked something else, right. titled Fantasy Baseball or something. Right. So what's the best way for our listeners to learn more, get in touch with you, or website and that kind of stuff?
Well, my primary website is divorcemoneymatters.com. And if they're interested as a professional in coming to the mixer, you can find me on Eventbrite under Divorce Town Mixer Atlanta.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for coming down.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You going to hang with us for just a little bit? We got one more guest we want to visit with this morning.
Surely.
All right, bringing it all home for us today, Lee, here on Atlanta Business Radio, we have from Clearleap, Mr. Bob Van Orden. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm real good.
Well, you've been very polite, very patient. I've seen you in the cheap seats over there nodding right. Your head. I thought I might have seen you take a few notes. Are you getting any value out of this conversation before now?
Absolutely. Really enjoyable. I enjoyed particularly the pay it forward. I'm somewhat aware of that going on in Atlanta. It's glad to see there's more of it going on.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So clearly, what's this all about?
About multi-screen TV. You know, if I had to put in a single word, what's changing in television, I'd say it's multi-screen. What that means is, you know, I like to say gadgets aren't just for geeks anymore. All these gadgets that we're all carrying around, it's mainstream. We all have, you know, tablets, PCs, mobile phones. Smartphone penetration in the U.S. is about 50%. And, of course, we still have television sets. So what's happening is we're every day, and you know, it's like a snowball rolling down the hill, we're watching more and more high-quality, high-value, entertainment-quality television on all these different screens. One thing I do like to point out, we still do watch it on the television. The television set's not going away, but we're watching it on all these different screens in different places, sometimes in our house, you know, in different rooms in our house, but sometimes outside of the house. And that's fundamentally changing the television market. And Clearleap is a company that, you know, we're built from scratch to take advantage of that trend, and we play a very specific role within that.
Yeah, I have 13 and 14-year-old kids, and they don't watch anything on the TV.
Yeah.
You know, it's the iPad, laptop, right. Computer, yeah. And it's just a different world for
right.
People
like,
that are,
is it,
you know,
the,
a different generation.
I have a 15-year-old as well, and YouTube and video channels, he spends more time there than he does, like, on network television.
Yeah, there's definitely generational issues here, but it's not just completely generational. And what we do at Clearleap, there's – certainly YouTube's a big thing, and there's, you know, other more kind of older, more traditional styles of online video. YouTube, I just heard a number last week that on average is, of course, are sometimes misleading, but on average, every single internet user on the planet watches 2 YouTube videos a month.
Wow.
So it's huge. But what we're – so that's interesting. You know, it shows you the volume. But what the trend that we're benefiting from and we're helping in is that people are watching, professional entertainment quality video. So one of our biggest customers we're proud of is HBO. And so if you're an HBO fan, for example, you might – the series Game of Thrones, very popular,
right,
very well-regarded. And you can now watch that every season, every episode, every show, on demand, whenever you want to watch it, not just on your television set. Well, you can do it on your television set, and that's nice. You know, sometimes it's nice to get the 60-inch screen with the surround
right.
sound and the comfortable chair, you know. But you can also do the same thing on your iPad, on your smartphone.
And you can plug computer. Those little gizmos into your big screen. We do that with Downton Abbey,
yes,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and people do that, yeah. So, fundamental change in viewing patterns, it changes some, things with the business model in the television industry and also just sort of the what we call the logistics of it. There's a logistics challenge, I'll try not to get too geeky, but there's essentially video is produced. There's people that produce video. We don't produce video. I'm not going in. None of us are clearly mm-hmm. going to be in the movies anytime soon, I don't think. But the video is produced, and it ends up in a very large digital file, and it has to be processed, manipulated, and then delivered to all these kind of final distribution points that get it to your devices. And we call that multi-screen logistics. It's kind of like FedEx or UPS, because they're not in video, but the metaphor is, they'll go to a company and say, hey, we'll not just get the brown box to your door on time. They do that. They do that very well, in the nice brown truck, right? I think we're sitting close to their headquarters
right.
today, by
yeah.
the way. But we'll also take over your whole, what they say is, inbound and outbound and return logistics. We'll run all of that for you. And so, to carry the metaphor, we basically do that for this process of getting video from post-production to the final distribution point. And I can get a lot geekier than
but
that.
How but how does it work from the consumer standpoint? Mm-hmm. Like I have Amazon Prime, so that gives mm-hmm. me access to lots of instant videos.
Correct.
And then, but then on my TV, I don't have Amazon Prime. So then I had to buy a box. I think it's Roku.
Yeah.
So I have a Roku box, and then now I have access to it. So as soon as I turn on my Roku box, now there's lots of channels in there.
Yes.
There's Netflix and Blockbuster,
right.
and there's all these HBO Go, I think's in there.
HBO Go, yeah.
And there's, I don't know if there's right. a Showtime version of that, but there's a Cinemax right. version. There's all these kind of choices. Now, do I have to buy a subscription for all of these things? Like, how do I manage this as a consumer?
That's a good question. There's going to be a plethora of different choices and ways to buy video for the consumer. There already is, as you're
right.
mentioning, and there's going to be more of that.
But there's free things, too. Like, there's TED videos.
That's
there's
right.
a TED channel and National Geographic channel and
that's
all
right.
kinds of trailers of yeah. movie channels.
The basic model that we're seeing, and frankly, and I'm not sure every consumer is going to like this, because we'd all like to pay less for pay TV.
Right.
We all pay
sure.
$80 to $120 or so a month for a pay TV, or package or bundle. And that's a lot, especially in these times. And I would certainly, all of us would like to pay less. I'm probably not the bearer of that good news today. Generally, the model we see is like HBO Go is the best example of this. So if you're an existing HBO subscriber, through a satellite provider, a cable or a telco provider, you basically get HBO Go for free. It's not an additional charge, but you have to be an additional subscriber. And for what I call the entertainment quality video, that's the model that we're seeing now. So all of the major networks and entertainment providers, Turner, MTV, Home and Garden Channel, you go up and down your dial and think of the top 100 or so channels. They're kind of coming out with that model. In the industry, they'll call this TV Everywhere. So you can get those channels that you subscribe to, and more often, not just the channels, but on demand, again, the whole library, every episode, every season.
If you will, so say more about how clearly it fits into all this.
Sure. So, again, the players in this industry, you have the programmers, the people like the MTVs or the Turners or the HBOs, and then you basically have the people that we buy television services from. So the cable companies, the satellite and telcos. And we serve both sets of customers, but both of them in slightly different ways have this logistics problem where video comes into them from lots of different sources and different places. And it's all not ready and prepared and in the right formats and, you know, the right data structures. And I'm going to get really geeky, but to be able to be delivered to and received and consumed seamlessly by us as consumer and all of our different screens or devices.
So that you can enjoy it on your
phone. Right, like I have a Galaxy Note.
Exactly. He calls
two.
It a phoblet.
Yeah. Right. So if we're successful.
It's huge.
Right, but it's but this is a different experience than like, you know, maybe a Droid or an iPhone, yeah. Right? But, and you make it work on all the platforms?
Exactly. Our job is to sort of normalize it so it can work on all the platforms. What really needs to happen, you know, and what we're helping to enable is that, you know, for the consumer, this is all just sort of magic. You know, all those logistics, it's neat, and the people we sell to in the industry, they like to talk about it and hear about it, and we can talk for hours about it, but that's the consumer that just needs to be magic. I want to watch Game of Thrones.
When I want to watch it on whatever device I happen to have in front of me, right?
You've got your Galaxy sitting there. I've got that, and now I'm going to go into my office, and I'm going to go switch it to the computer screen. You know, the way it really should work is, you know, where I paused, it just starts again, the same point.
Right, like my Kindle. Like on my Kindle, I can read a book on my phone, and then I'm done, and then I go home and I get my Kindle, and then it knows where I'm at.
Yeah,
and it's seamless.
And what we do is we apply, you know, overused term in the technology world, but we apply the cloud. We don't make specific boxes or appliances or products per se. We have a software system that sits in the cloud, which really means very sophisticated data centers. Again, if I was going to get geeky, these places are really cool. They're incredibly secure.
They're literally cool, too, though. Don't have to keep them cold.
They're literally cool, yeah. And they're full of computers and routers and switches. And, you know, we can distribute all this functionality, and it's very adaptable, either if there's a new device, you know. Four years ago, what was an iPad? Who'd heard of iPad?
Yeah, no kidding.
Spelled iPad. Now, you can't live without it.
Well, and to your point earlier in the conversation.
Which means there's going to be another device like that down in the next round. Who knows
absolutely.
What it's going to be? So you have to adapt.
Well, to your point earlier in the conversation, it's really not necessarily generational. Here you got an old man with broken dreams. He's got a Roku, a Kindle, a phoblet, a TV. I mean, there's a...
Well, Lance was talking about his family. I have teenage children, too, and they behave the same way. And, you know... I wish they were doing their homework more rather than – but anyway, that's another story. But then I have my grandparents who are actually in town for the weekend. And I like to joke, you know, between my teenagers and my grandparents, they're the ones that are actually more sophisticated with all this technology because, me as a middle-aged parent, you know, I'm too busy managing both ends there. I don't have the time to – So, it's not always just generational. It's really very – I mean, it's just extremely widespread and worldwide. You know, you go to Yeah, certainly here in the U.S. and Western Europe, you know, the penetration of these gadgets is just widespread. It's mainstream. It's, again, not just for geeks. It's mainstream. But even in, you know, developing countries, and you look at, China or Brazil, and they're talking about real soon there's going to be $50 smartphones. So, you know, those countries, you're going to see enormous penetration of these devices in the next couple of years. And, you know, we're fully confident you're going to see the same trends. Or, you know, people are going to go, I want my... You know, again, this ages me a little bit, but I want my MTV, right? They don't say that anymore, do they? But,
now, what about a bandwidth requirements with all this video flying through the clouds all over the place? Do we have the bandwidth to handle all of that and all these devices that are just kind of...
Generally, yes. Broadly, I'd say yes, and there's good news on that front. One of the things we have to do is create many variations of the video so different networks can handle it. Because you might have your broadband speed at home might be, 10 megabits per second. And then when you're running around the street with your iPhone, maybe you're getting 3. So you have to have different video formats that will accommodate that. But generally the answer is yes. And then there are improvements in the technology. It's basically encoding or digital compression that is the magic that makes it happen. And there's constantly improvements. Smart engineers are always figuring out how to, with less bandwidth, have the same or better quality video.
Now, what about Atlanta as a place for you to kind of grow your company? And maybe, Lance, you can speak of this too. How is the startup and the early stage technology scene here in town? You guys going to battle? Or are you going to just point to each other?
My view is it's good. It's gotten better. but it still needs to get better.
And what better mean?
I think, you know, more people involved, more examples of companies that have been successful. Something where you sort of have to have both a track record and momentum as a community. And it's gotten a lot better, and I'd say, versus 5 or 10 years ago. There's a pretty healthy, in my view, angel investing community in town. That's a good thing.
What about brain power? How are we doing with brain power?
I think we're better than we think there. You know, I think the combination of the universities in town, obviously Georgia Tech and Emory, but then also Atlanta, is a magnet really for all the schools in the South, graduates from all the schools in the Southeast. Now, I'm not going to get into college football or college basketball here, but and all the rivalries.
Now, we do a lot of startup events where we show up and we do radio at startup events, and we were just at Startup Riot. And that was the first – there was about 30, I think, technology companies that are trying to get funding from angel-level investors, I believe. This was the first year I can remember that there were so many out-of-state companies that were there presenting.
A lot.
Is that – what would be a reason that that's happening here in town?
Well, I think for the same reason that a lot of college students in the Southeast flock to Atlanta – there are companies throughout the Southeast that are flocking to Atlanta because it's a better place to start your company than, say, Birmingham.
Well, nothing I saw three firms, I believe, from Chattanooga.
There's more money here. There's more activity here. And there is talent here. So, you know, clearly they have a lot of their talent came out of Scientific Atlanta to do all their technical stuff, right? So there are people here that have years of experience and know how to build technology companies.
Yeah, and there are some segments. There's clearly this video technology segment. One maybe doesn't get quite as much notice, but that's here in Atlanta, I think, in droves. But then you have the other ones that people maybe get a little more notice, healthcare IT.
We hear a lot about.
Payments and the whole payment
like security, financial security.
Well, and startup
is a great one, too, because that need never goes away.
And the game and gaming, it seems that that's a budding industry here.
Absolutely. Yeah, gaming's definitely expanded. There's also, there's a lot of music. Gets made in Atlanta, a lot of music talent, and that's driven, whether it's gaming and some kind of ancillary industries, that's driven a lot of that in here. So I think it's definitely growing and getting better.
So you're all bullish on Atlanta technology scene? Do you think this is going to be one of the hubs around the country? I know we're trying to be that.
I mean, it takes a long time to build a technology ecosystem, if you will. But what I've seen, and I've really been involved in it a lot over the last 7-8 years, and I've seen that it getting better all the time. And I know you've had some people on that talk about what's going on at the Atlanta Technology Village,
right?
And that's just another hive, very similar to ATDC, that's going to get people together,
right? And we've had the Hypopotamus folks on as well,
another great group.
And it seems like there's more and more of that popping up in the last year or so that hadn't been here forever.
Yeah, and that's happening, and not only that, I believe that Georgia Tech and Emory and Georgia State are great schools as well. But Georgia Tech is historically what they've done is they've focused on getting their graduates jobs at large companies,
right?
And they've kind of opened it up a little bit, and they're letting them know that there's this entrepreneurial path that's open to you if you want it to be, with things such as what they call the Inventure Prize. Which is a contest
that,
for
that
students.
Was just recently happened, right?
Yeah, so there's great movement.
And then are we keeping the brains here? Because there's been a period of time where a lot of the smart people started things, and then all of a sudden they got jobs somewhere else. And
I'm still here.
Lance is still here. Well, and I got to say, I think startup entrepreneurs who work 80 hours a week, probably a pretty good niche for you, Lisa. See, everybody wins.
My wife's great.
Yeah, mine too, just on the record. I'm very happily married.
Now, Bob, what's next up for Clearly?
International. I think that's clearly an area. And then I think actually, I talked about multi-screen everywhere, but it's really just the beginning. There's some great examples. I mean, HBO Go, they're our customer, so of course.
So you got to say nice things about
them. But even notwithstanding, it's a great product. They've done a wonderful job. It's a good experience. It's well designed, and it has all the content you want. you know, content's king. That's why people watch TV and watch television.
And some of the stuff you can get before it even appears on HBO.
Yeah, it comes out very early. They're not withholding it like, you know.
Well, like some of them, but they make you wait like eight days before you can even look at the
But I think there's two things going to happen. There's other – in the U.S. specifically, so other programmers are going to catch up and do similar things, and you're starting to see that every quarter, every so often. There's a lot of plans I know about that I can't tell you about. But every major programmer, I think it's safe to assume, is working on, you know, a TV Everywhere type experience. Then you go – I think the next step that will happen is, you know, why do I have – do I really want to have a HBO app and a Turner app and a –
Right, now I got my 500 channels on my phone now.
Yeah, well, why can't I have one app that sort of aggregates and makes that easy for me? And there's lots of search and discovery issues and benefits to be had. And I think that's ultimately, you know, geeky word, we say it's an aggregated experience. But I think that's where it's going to go. So, for us, I mean, there's international expansion, and then it's really just the beginning of this trend. So there's just more and more volume happening all the time.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, your website?
It's www.clearleap.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for being part of this, and thank all of our guests for being part of this. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.